Time for this week's edition of Sports Lit 101 with Bruce Pratt joining us through the magic of technology from beautiful Swanville, Maine. Welcome back, sir.
It's good to be back. One of the great things about this book was when I picked it up, you know, books will often have a series of photographs in the middle, sort of to break up the text. And the book opened to that page, and I looked down and I saw this name. And then I learned that in 1924, in the Paris Olympics, Rob Gronkowski's grandfather, Ignatius Iggy Gronkowski, was on the U.S. cycling team.
Wow.
And I thought to myself, well, that's pretty interesting. But what is astonishing about the book are all the other connections like that. We've talked about enough cycling books before to not need to belabor the point that in the early 1900s, the most popular spectator sport in America was cycling. And it was such a hit that in Madison Square Garden, three times a week, 20,000 people showed up to see endurance races or sprint races or what were called primes, where there were races where a celebrity or someone would suddenly say, for this lap, I'll throw in another 500 to the winner. It was a big deal. And the people who were the famous cyclists of the age were among the most prominent athletes, and they were probably among the best paid. I mean, they could make, some of those guys could make $5,000 a year in 1910 when, you know, a lawyer was making $1,200. And the reason that cycling was so popular was because it had various kinds of events. The real epicenters of cycling in the early 1900s were New Jersey, Newark, Somerville, Fitchburg, Massachusetts, Springfield, Massachusetts, Providence, New York. And there was also another kind of race called the Six. And the Six has played a tremendous role in making cycling popular. And that is when generally they were teams of two. There could be just individuals, races where just individuals raced essentially for six straight days, sleeping when they needed to. And whoever had completed the most laps at the end of 6 days was the winner of a prize. And it was usually a substantial amount of money. So velodromes, which we think of now as, you know, we see in the Olympics with the high bank turns and the composite tracks, were constructed out of wood, and they were everywhere. They were all over New England, the Northeast in particular, and bicycle racing was extremely popular. What I did not know, and I found fascinating, is that many, many people who became famous bicycle racers, people that were celebrities in their age, that drew the attention of Hollywood and Broadway's biggest stars, were people who had been injured in another sport and took up cycling for rehab. And it's true also that a tremendous number of cyclists were also speed skaters. In fact, Artie Longshow, who was from Fitchburg, Massachusetts, the son of Finnish and Swedish immigrants, was the only person for many, many years to compete in both the Winter and Summer Olympics in the same year. That later happened again, I forget, in the 80s, but he did this back in quite a while ago. And he was also someone that had scores of national championships in both sports. And speed skating was also at the time very popular. Of course, in those days, you could actually skate outdoors in places like Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and Delaware, and we can barely skate outdoors anymore here. But what Peter Joffrey Nye does in this book is just do a great job of making it about the people. The foreword is by Eric Heiden, who also was a national cycling champion, as we know, set four world and one Olympic, or four Olympic and one world records as a speed skater. But what I found really fascinating was the way that this is such an international sport and always has been, that the author was able to with the kind of precision you get in a Doris Kearns Goodwin book or a really good book about a historical figure, all the precise historical stuff without it being dry. The book is never dry. It's always a very interesting look at the relationship between cycling and society. Now, the original version came out in 1988. The new version came out in 2020. And in that period of time, of course, We had the whole Lance Armstrong fiasco. We had, the great story of Greg LeMond's courage. All these things were included in the book. The book now goes up to the 2016 Olympics in Rio. And it gets really interesting because the author was originally signed by Rodale Books to do a book with Lance Armstrong. And he knows Lance Armstrong a little bit. There's an incredibly painful chapter on Armstrong and the cheating and his fall from grace and everything that was going on at the time and how certain cyclists who were clean at the time just lost their ability to make a living. But it's really a fascinating historical study. I think what's interesting to think, for instance, Major Taylor was the first African-American national cycling champion. He made more money in a year than Ty Cobb, including all the ways that they both made money. And yet, if you ask anybody about who knows sports, Ty Cobb, they know. Major Taylor, who? Mm. Yeah, and so a lot of history that is brought to life in the book, and a lot of great stories about Megan Guarnier out of Little Middlebury College, Division III, who goes on to be cycle in the 16 Olympics and become a major cyclist. Stories of people so poor that they couldn't get a bicycle to race on or raced in penny loafers and a t-shirt because they didn't have what they needed. People go through incredible training and incredible hardships to become cyclists in a way we think of those sort of stories about athletes in the big four sports now. But of course at the time it was the big sport, and Major League Baseball came close in interest in terms of attendance. Boxing was big, but you only get so many people in a boxing match, and you can't have three of those a week that are going to draw 20,000 people. What I like is that it brings us up to date, through 2016. You learn a lot about the change in technology. Some of fans of this segment, if we have them, have checked in with other books we've talked about before. So some of this they will know, but I will guarantee that 95% of this would only be known to someone that was already a real, real diehard cycling fan.
That sounds great. So check it out. Hearts of Lions. And what's the author again? Who's the author?
It's Peter Joffre, Joffre, Nye. It is from University of Nebraska Press. The History of American Bicycle Racing is the subtitle. Great Forward by Eric Heiden. It's a long book, but you won't in any way feel badly about spending a good portion of the rest of the summer reading it. Really good.
Excellent. What's coming up next week?
Next week, we're going to go back to running, and about a story about a man I did not know, Joe I. Vigil, who was one of the most successful cross-country and track coaches in the U.S. This book comes from Solstice Publishing, which gave us Imogene, a love story that Miles Schrag put together. Miles has been telling me about this book. It's written by a guy named Pat Melgaris, who was one of Vigil's coaches, one of Vigil's Adams State runners. But here's the interesting thing about this guy. From 1965 to 1993, his record as a track and field coach and cross-country coach, 3,014 wins, 176 losses, winning percentage of 942.
That's not bad.
Yeah, 19 national championships, 425 All-Americans, 87 individual national champs. And in 2019, in the NCAA Division II cross-country championships, his men's team had a perfect score.
Wow.
I've been around cross-country and track a long time. I've never seen a perfect score where your first five runners are the first five runners across in order so that you have the lowest possible score. That's incredible. I can't wait to finish reading it.
Excellent. Well, we'll hear all about that next week on Sports Lit 101. Thank you, Bruce.
My pleasure, sir.